This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
That right there is Wes Durham, his whole life.
What's happening? Good morning.
Chester, sound asleep. Fuller, taking up space. Robert, Captain Ron, Otto having a lousy day. Otto's in a bad mood, so don't go back to the Christmas decoration room right around the corner from Mrs. P's upholstery building.
What's going on right there?
Otto's having a tough day. I'm worried about the refrigerator stock.
Really?
Yeah. Otto, he'll be all right.
Okay.
I had to cheer him up a little bit this morning. He'll be all right.
All right. Good to see you.
What's happening?
I got late breaking news here. Virginia's season has come to an end.
Yeah, man, I was bummed out to see that last night.
Yeah, right.
You got to be able to make a free throw. How many times have you heard that? Got to be able to make some shots.
Right.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, go final 3 minutes and get 1 point.
Yeah, first to 50 didn't work last night for the Hoos. They were first to 50 but did not close, and their season comes to an abrupt halt. One away from New York City, and the Bonnies come in there with their rowdy bunch of fans having a good time in Charlottesville.
Anything to get out of Ole in New York this time of year.
Well, you know, St. Bonaventure, you know, they rallied past Clemson when they saw them earlier in the year. Virginia Tech took them to the woodshed here in Charlotte.
Right.
And so they get the last laugh eliminating the Hoos from the NIT.
The Bonnies did it on the road, too, at Oklahoma, at
Colorado, at Virginia. That's impressive. I don't care who you are. Those are three good wins.
That's like old NBA road trip days. Yeah. So Virginia's season comes to an end. 52-51 is the final last night at John Paul Jones Arena. 21 wins for the Cavaliers. 10th time under Tony Bennett, right?
They had a weird year.
No question.
I think the biggest Virginia basketball fan, Virginia fan period, would look at this season and go, man, I'm not sure what to make of this.
Yeah.
Same old on defense, right? But they just at times
numbers
just
could
not score the basketball. I mean, there were too many moments this year where they would give you the 6 minutes of, anybody going to make a shot? I mean, we're going to score here? What's going on? I mean, so – you know, Tony Bennett's a brilliant coach, Hall of Fame. Again, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Won a national title.
Right.
He's been incredible in the league. Mm-hmm. He'll have to figure out from an offensive standpoint, whether it be through the portal, whether it be the upcoming incoming class that he's got. And again, I don't follow recruiting, so I'm not going to go into detail of that. But they've got to figure out the offensive piece of the puzzle. Because what they did this year, it's hard to win games when it simply can't score on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at kind of the – and we all know, right, in college basketball, the one thing we know is fluid is rosters, right?
Yeah, what is that going to look like?
Yeah, so I would tell you this. I think you've got a couple things about Virginia that intrigue you. Young guys that could develop. You really like Reese Beekman. You really like, you know, the addition of Gardner. Gardner would be back. Franklin would be back. But you've got that Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, go get a basket when you tie Jerome, go get a basket when
those
you
are
need
all NBA players.
Well, no, I get that. But
that's,
I mean,
what you need to get.
You
players.
Had that in the funnel for a while. I'll be interested. You know, Gardner was a piece. There's clearly a piece you can work with. I mean, in terms of the points and the production there. So I have a question for you. Kihei Clark. I think he has a swing on the house if he needs to play one more year.
Isn't he under the Ricky Stokes plan? I mean, Ricky Stokes is at the University of Virginia, I swear to God, for 15 years. Othell Wilson was at Virginia for at least a dozen years.
I may be there's wrong. Always, there's I may be wrong. But
there's always something in the Virginia DNA with guards that
right.
They seem like they never go away. So if Kihei Clark comes back, I'm
Billy
not
Billy Langlo, Dave Kesters.
I mean, they were there forever. For anybody that's old enough to remember some of these names we're throwing on you. But Virginia always seemed to have that guy that was there for 11 years.
Will Ogenen, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I may not be. Assuming this was Kihei Clark's last game, Virginia was 97-31 in his 4 years. That's 75% winning.
Well, if that was his last game last night, I will always remember. When you say 10 years from now.
Mama D. D-K-D.
Right. When you say 10 years from now, remember Kihei Clark?
Yep.
The first thing that will pop in my head is the Virginia-Purdue game and him making that play and throwing the perfect pass for Virginia to not only win the game, actually put it in overtime to eventually win the game, to go on to win the national championship.
Yeah, and threw it right by Kyle Guy.
Yeah.
There's Gardner. Cavaliers just, again, oh, that's a kid I'd be excited about too, by the way. Shedrick,
I just think they need a couple scores, Wes. They just got to find guys that can make baskets because they're going to defend. You know that's going to happen. But just looking at Virginia, again, we sit there and look at Virginia. Again, it's like ACC basketball. When your standard is this, anything that comes up a little short, you kind of go, well, you know, that's what Tony Bennett's developed at UVA. I mean, he's just been terrific. But, you know, they opened up the season at home and lost to Navy. They ended up the season at home and lost to St. Bonaventure.
Right.
Now, in between, they had a domination of Providence, who we know how good the Friars are.
Sure.
They had a home loss to Clemson by 17.
Correct.
What? Huh? They were able to win at Duke. They swept Miami. I mean, they were a really strange group to figure out. You had games at North Carolina where, you know, the game in Carolina, they're down 100. Mm-hmm. Looked like they had never played the game before.
They scored 13 the first half in New
York Brooklyn against them. Yeah. I mean, they really were a weird team to try to figure out. When they made shots, like a lot of teams, I mean, you kind of liked what you saw. There were times when they couldn't throw it in the ocean or the Chesapeake Bay, and you're like, who are they going to beat? So I thought last night was kind of like the typical Virginia game this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's 50-45 with 3 minutes to go. Can they close? They just didn't make free throws. The foul on Beekman to kick him out was ridiculous. But, hey, forget the refs. Go make free throws. Make a couple shots. You win the game. You get to New York City. So at the end of the day, 20 or more wins, terrific. But there is work to be done in Charlottesville.
If I told you, if we look back in 2 years and say it's a bridge year, this season's a bridge season, I think Virginia fans would be okay with that.
Right. I totally agree.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Let's be transparent. Virginia needs to be good. Like I always talk about with Louisville, that's why that hire is so important with Kenny Payne.
No question.
Louisville needs to be good for the league.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Bennett, given the transitory state that we're in now with coaches, this is Kay's last go around. If you haven't heard, you know, this is it for Kay, if you haven't heard. Roy's gone. Larrañaga is having an incredible run.
Right.
You know, Jim Boeheim is the tail end here.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Hamilton, get the Florida State Seminoles back. But Virginia's got to be one of those staples. I mean, you've got a guy who's a brilliant coach, who's done great things in the league, has won a national championship. They can't be the 7th and 8th and 9th seeded team in the league. That's where I'm coming from with Virginia.
So one of the two teams from the ACC is eliminated in the NIT. The other one goes tonight. And that's Wake Forest on the road to College Station, Texas, against Texas A&M. Little ACC-SEC to get us kind of in full lather. Deacons have looked impressive, beating Towson and VCU to get to the quarterfinal game tonight at Reed Arena down at College Station. Steve Forbes has made the rounds with comments, though, about advocacy on the national level for the ACC. Here are his comments from the other day.
Pac-10 or Pac-12, I'm so old, it used to be Pac-8, whatever it was. I know that Fran Fraschilla is beating the drum for the Big 12. I know Jimmy Dykes beats it for the SEC, you know, and the Big 10 has their own network. You know, they've got their own litany of people that are going to speak very highly. There's probably somebody, I'm just drawing a blank on the Big 10, but we can't take for granted just that we're the ACC and that we're the best league in the country, that has the best tradition, the most history, the most national championships, the most NBA players. I can go bam, 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 you know, but somebody's got to be beating that drum and not allowing some of these uninformed people to beat up on us like that, you know, like tweeting out one bid league. I mean, that's just ridiculously stupid, you know, but people were doing it and national people were doing it. And it doesn't probably affect the, you know, how many bids we get or whatever, but it does affect sometimes the narrative of our league. And I think we have to be, I think we should be very protective of that. We have a great thing, an unbelievable tradition. Now, granted, I haven't been a part of it for very long, but I feel like I should be a caretaker of that. And I will be as long as I'm the coach of Wake Forest.
Okay. Now you've heard Steve Forbes's comments. I didn't see the one big league tweet, the one bid league tweet.
I saw it.
Okay.
And you know what? The person that said it looks like an idiot. So what?
Okay. But down year for the league in terms of its heritage.
Of the standard by which the ACC measures itself.
Right.
This has been a quote-unquote down year.
Mm-hmm.
However, in March, we all keep score.
Right.
And right now, in March, the ACC is 8-2. 3 in the Sweet 16 again. So Now, that could change on a dime. They could all get wiped out.
In two
Thursday
nights, it could change.
Yeah. Or you could, we could be sitting here next week going, hey, man, 75% of the Final Four is from the Atlantic Coast Conference. Where is everybody? You don't know how this is going to play out. But, you know, Wes, I don't know about you, but I carry a little red book with me in my briefcase. And I love to write down quotes, sayings, and stuff. It just keeps my brain moving.
Right.
One of the things, I went back and picked one out that reminded me of what Steve Forbes was talking about. And the line is, and I can't tell you who made the quote because I just write down the quote. What other people think of you is none of your business. What other people think of you is none of your business. Hmm. Here's the deal. If you want a cheerleader on television as far as an analyst goes, and again, Jimmy Dykes does a great job. I think Dykes does a great job. Fran Fraschilla is a brilliant basketball guy. Sean Farnham is terrific. Mm-hmm. If they want to do the pom-poms, I got no problem with that. If that's what makes you happy, go for it. But when you're a coach and you're a player, you want to change the narrative? How many times have I said this on this show? 100 times? Win. You know, the reason the narrative is what it is for the league this particular year is 4-16. What is that? That is the ACC's record against ranked non-conference opponents. That happened back in November and December. Seth Greenberg was on the other day talking about, hey, the work you did not do in November and December really altered the mindset of what you are now currently doing. The only way to change the narrative of what you did and didn't do in November and December is to kick everybody's rear end when it matters in March. So far, the league's done that. So I think for Coach Forbes, hey, you can doesn't matter if, again, I don't do games, but if you had Joe Smith on ESPN or CBS or Fox or whatever with the pom-poms, ACC's the greatest thing since sliced bread, yada, yada. None of that really matters. You've got to go win games, right? And if you win games, all that other nonsense takes care of itself. There's a lot of networks that will hype stuff beyond belief. That's all fine and good if you want to do it. But you know what? When you fail miserably, you get called out. You get called out. And you know, I've seen that happen too. I've saw it happen in this tournament. There's one particular league that loves to tell you how great it is. And quite frankly, they've stunk in the tournament. And I saw a person, no, I'm not going to name a name, saying, oh, now I know what it feels like to be an ACC football fan. Well, that's all cute and stuff, but guess what? Since the last time the Southeastern Conference won a national championship in basketball, the ACC's won 3 national championships in football and played for 2 more. Now, if you want to be a fool, knock yourself out. It's free of charge. Go for it. Hopefully you can get some more hits on your Twitter account. But all this stuff is nonsense. The object is to win the games. It's simple as that. You want to change the narrative? Win. Period. Buzz Williams wants to whine about the NCAA tournament. There's a bias. Shh. Go win some games. Go win more games. Steve Forbes doesn't like the fact that there's not an ACC person doing as an analyst carrying the rock. You don't have to. I mean, just go win your games. We know what the league's all about. You either get it done or you don't. It's that simple. That's how I feel about it.
I think his comments, to me at least, get a little more play right now because of the transitive nature the league's going through too, because there's not that quick identity, you know, with this coaching landscape being what it is and new faces and new places. And you mentioned Kenny Payne at Louisville, but you do have 3 teams in the Sweet 16. So I think the drumbeat of the league is a little louder right now than
it
was. It should be. Than it was in November and December.
As it should be. You know why? You've won games that matter. That's what this is all about. We say the same thing in the football season, Wes. You know, you want to change the narrative. Somebody other than Clemson in football needs to be good. I'm not reinventing the wheel here.
Yeah.
And when that happens, then the conference could start saying, hey, guess what? We're playing just as well as the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac, whatever you want to do.
Right.
Whatever spin you want to come up with. But you got to win games. I mean, when you're not getting the job done on the field or on the court, the best thing to do is be quiet and get to work.
I do believe, and tell me if you think you're with me on this, I do believe the ACC has a deeper depth chart in terms of quality basketball programs than just about anybody else in the country. But you got to get to the quality. You got to get to those type seasons where you have continuity. You can't be just throwing 9-11s up there in conference play and hoping you get in. The other thing is this too. In the emergence of football and the attention that's being paid to football in the ACC, and there's no question, we've talked about it before on here, that's a real key to Jim Phillips's mission statement as commissioner.
Right.
But at the same time, basketball can't lose its way. And I would contend that college basketball's lost its way a little bit on the landscape of the American sporting public here. Okay? So college basketball, particularly this league, has got to remain vigilant, if you will, about pushing that forward, pushing it forward with the type of games, pushing it forward with the exposures for your program, doing all the things you can. We certainly try and do it on this show to talk about the league and talk about its depth in men's basketball. But I'm not, I agree with you in this light. I'm not sure there needs to be a pronounced rah-rah guy for the league on a national level. Sean Farnham, Pac-12? Absolutely. Sean played at UCLA. Fran Fraschilla, Big 12? Yeah. Now, Jimmy Dykes in the SEC? Sure. Jimmy's been affiliated with the Southeastern Conference for a long time.
And I, by the way, and I, for the record, again, I think all three of those guys
they do a great job. It's great not about what they do. Yeah, and Sean will actually tell you if a team's playing badly, he'll say they're not playing great right now. You know, you could say Seth might be, Greenberg might be the guy for the ACC. It doesn't matter. What it is your league has to be responsible for its own resume every year.
Right. If the ACC, if, the biggest word in sports, sure. Remember? If the ACC was 16-4 and not 4-16 in the non-conference ranked deal in November, December, there is no narrative mm-hmm. on that front.
Yeah.
None. I mean, so you got to go get it done on the field, on the court, whatever the sport may be. And whoever wants to hype it, man, knock yourself out. You want to be an idiot on Twitter? Knock yourself out. You want to be a moron on television? Knock yourself out. But, you know, you got to have some facts to back up a position.
Right.
As opposed to being, hey, let me give you the hot take and then not be held accountable. To me, that's more bothersome than anything else. But the league, our league here on our network, mm-hmm. you know, basketball has been king for 100 years. Football is trying to get better, even though football's had some success.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, 3 national championships and played for 2 more in the last 9 years. So is it great? It needs to be better. From a basketball perspective, has the tradition been untouched? Nobody else is close to this league in tradition and history. But this particular year, based on the standard that we have set for ourselves mm-hmm. in this league, it has been a down year.
Yeah.
The good news is, in March, when it matters, the conferences look great.
Well,
look
terrific. And we've talked about this, too. The ranked record against non-conference opponents is it's a measuring stick that happens in the first 75 days of the season, first 65 days of the season, from the start in early November till about the time you get through December, and then there's an occasional non-conference game maybe that might factor into it. That number, 4-16 this year, was not great the year before and not great in 1920. It was spectacular in 18-19. But the idea being that the ACC, you know, non-conference games, competitive games, success early is the key. Because remember this, as much as we follow ACC basketball, most of America doesn't pick this thing up until the Super Bowl ends.
That's right.
So the narrative that's being built from December and January while college football and the NFL are finishing is something that everybody just goes, okay, well, I'm going to check in on college basketball now. How's it going? Well, when they got to college basketball this year, the ACC was having its worst year of the century.
Keep in mind, when the Super Bowl ended, the conversation on this network was, hey, is North Carolina a tournament team?
Right.
Right. Now, and that was a real conversation, mm-hmm. right? That wasn't the SEC network or the Big Ten or the Pac-12 network taking cheap shots. That was our network. That was us.
Yeah.
Say, hey, listen, the Super Bowl is over. You think Carolina's going to make it in the tournament?
Right.
That was a legitimate question. Why? It's all about results.
Yeah.
It's not about some announcer on courtside with pom-poms on. I mean, it's got nothing to do with it. You got to go win games.
Yeah.
And now North Carolina's a story. Why? They're winning. They're eliminating one seats. They're looking the part. They're winning at Duke. I mean, again, I say it all the time. The only way to change the narrative is to win games.
Yeah, look, we enjoy having Steve Forbes on this show. He's terrific.
It's awesome.
Really enjoy him. I consider him a friend in some ways. And I would say this. I'm glad he said what he said because I want to know what coaches think. Absolutely. Do we necessarily agree with it 100%? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But the thing about it is a talking point that makes you think about the value that this sport has within this league, too. And I appreciate that from that standpoint.
Well, he understands what it's about.
He does.
It's
absolutely
an honor to be in the league when you're a coach. With this, again, with what has been accomplished in this conference, which dwarfs everybody else.
There you go.
And that's the truth.
Busy show today. 8:30, Dallin Cuff will be here. 8:45, one of the great women's amateur golfers on the planet.
Yep, she's been on before.
Florida State's Beatrice Wallen will be here. We got a lot of things covered with
her. Going to Augusta.
We got a lot of things covered with her. Augusta, several other things. You're going to try and get the loop, by the way? That's what I thought.
I told you.
I knew it.
I've got major championship golf experience as a caddy.
Yes, you do. And in the 9 o'clock hour, Kate Douglas, national champion, will be here from Virginia's women's swimming team. Look
forward.
Told you.
When the Hoos are in the water, they dominate.
Win. Just
swimming,
win.
Diving, rowing.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I got couple things here before we get going. This will be very important to you. This first one especially.
Barbecue, all you can eat?
No. Preston Willett, who works in Charlottesville, he's at CBS 19.
CBS 19.
Easy now. Good people. CBS 19 covering the University of Virginia. This last night tweeted, Armon Franklin says Virginia will travel to Italy this summer to play.
See you there.
Maybe you and Tony Bennett can have some cookies.
Well, I think, no, I don't need Tony Bennett's cookies when I go to Italy. No disrespect. I have total confidence that Coach Bennett's got great cookies. Yeah. He says he does.
So there you go.
But when you're in Italy, you don't need Tony Bennett cookies.
Yeah. All right. Second note. Important day.
Where are they going? Do you know?
No, it's just said Armon Franklin says UVA will travel to play in
Italy.
Well,
we need to get Coach on the phone
here.
That.
All right. Other important note here. It's birthday week on this show, is it not?
Yep. Gigi's birthday. Yesterday was Steve Forbes' birthday and Mike Bray's birthday yesterday.
Brian Ives' birthday. Today, John S. Newman, Georgia Tech class of 55. Packer.
Look at that guy.
Celebrates his birthday. Nice hat, huh?
Who's the old guy on the left?
That is my father-in-law. Right there on Magical Bates Road in Cartersville, Georgia.
Right now, the reason he's living a long, healthy life is that thing in his glass.
That's exactly right.
Yep. I can guarantee it.
Yep. So happy birthday, John.
Good for him.
Hope you have a great day. So there you go. We got calls, too. We got all this stuff coming out of the break.
I want to know where Virginia's going to Italy, man.
All right. We'll figure that out. 844-SAY-ACCN, Tremaine in North Carolina. Tremaine, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hope everyone's doing well today. Hate to see UVA season end like that, but I mean, at the same time, it's kind of a relief because this year was an anomaly. But, you know, Mark, you'd asked about it. We got a top 10 class coming in next year. We'll see what we do in the transfer portal. I hate to end it like that. I don't know. That last foul, no one touched him. But at the end of the day, Mark, you're absolutely right. You got to hit your free throws. You hit your free throws. We're not even in that position. But I'm curious, gentlemen, your thoughts on this. Do you think that do you think that the NCAA should add a rule? And I'm speaking on the Reese Beekman, his last foul, because the Oscars are coming up, and the guy that got the foul needs to have a nomination because that was – It was brilliant. Do you think maybe a rule should be added where a coach can review a play like that in the last 10 minutes? Last 2 minutes? That's just my question. Hope you guys are doing well.
Thank you.
That. How about the NCAA come up with a rule that those guys that did that game last night shouldn't be doing games? That call last night on Beekman was almost – I mean, I was like, well, wait a minute. Did I miss something? I mean, it was brutal. It was just a terrible call. But – that had nothing to do with Virginia not winning the game. Virginia had it. Right? Make your free throws. Make your free throws. The game's over. I don't care what the call is.
Yeah.
But Beekman's fifth foul was absolutely atrocious.
Yeah. Tremaine mentions the one thing, though, that I think we all, at least from a Virginia perspective, have to keep in mind, or at least hope that this is the case, that this is the bridge. This is the anomaly that gets you across into that new whatever brand of Tony Bennett Virginia is.
Yeah, but you know, we're treating Virginia's season in some respects like they just went 10-25.
And they didn't.
And they won 20 games.
Right, correct. Right? I mean, and I just think we have that expectation, though. Again, the league, Virginia fits in that expectation. Their success the last 8 years is Terrific.
I mean, you're going to watch some teams play this week that are still alive and kicking. Miami, Virginia beat them twice.
Yeah.
Duke won at Cameron. Mm-hmm. Providence beat them by 20. Yep. I mean, Virginia had moments this year where you're like, all right, when they're making shots, they can play with people. But the problem was offensively, they were challenged. And unfortunately, it happened quite often.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Okay, kids, we got ACC baseball for you now. We got it Friday night. Number 7 Florida State welcomes Duke. Dick Howser Stadium, Mike Martin Field in Tallahassee. Our coverage available on ACC Network and the ESPN app. Then, Saturday night, primetime, Georgia Tech visits NC State. 7 o'clock start. Jackets roll into Doak Field at Dale Park. NC State, Georgia Tech played some weird baseball games in recent years, Pack, about the last 25 of them. Saturday night, 7 o'clock, ACC Network also streaming live on the ESPN app.
I will just say one thing. I mentioned this the other day. Tommy White of NC State, guess what happened yesterday?
Hit another one?
No. Jake Elhoff went yard again. 13 for Big Jake at UVA. Who's have won 18 straight at home? Just saying. Those dudes are absolute raking it.
Some
right
of that midweek stuff is pretty interesting.
Jake Ellis got 13 bombs, mm-hmm. right? So I'm telling you, I know we got March Madness on the brain. You got an NIT game going on tonight with Wake and all that stuff. But the tater total between
tater total.
The tank there at NC State, Big Jake.
Yeah.
State Farm up there at Wahoo Wah now. Those two dudes are going yard.
I may slide back up there and take in a game in Raleigh on Saturday night.
I thought you didn't like baseball.
No. I like going to the ball games.
You just only broadcast.
I didn't say that.
You certainly did.
Well, sometimes they get a little long in the tooth,
well,
Coach.
You just said it then.
Yeah. They get a little long in the tooth.
So quit lying.
Not lying. All right. Sweet 16 resumes tomorrow night. Duke will be in action against Texas Tech out in San Francisco on the ACC side.
What a trip.
The Red Raiders and the Blue Devils. The old adage, kids, we've said it on this program from time to time, styles make fights. Mm-hmm. Well, tomorrow night is one of those.
It'll be a fight.
Yeah. Texas Tech allows 18.4 paint points per game. Say that fast a few times. That's the least by a major conference team since 2008.
Said on Monday's show, Duke put 44 on the board against Sparty in the paint. It will serve them well coming up Thursday night. I'm telling you right now, man, or whatever. What is it, Thursday night? Is that right?
Yeah, the game's tomorrow
Thursday night.
Yeah.
This is a fist fight. This is a back alley brawl. Here's what I like for Duke. And by the way, is BPI still got Texas Tech favored in this game? Can we get confirmation on that?
Here's where Duke is. Yeah.
Right, BPI still likes Texas Tech. Okay. Here's what I like for Duke's thing. I think Texas Tech can give you a dose of Virginia from time to time. And what I mean by that is...
Offensively, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is there are times that Texas Tech will go a while without making a shot. Now, their defense is legit. Mm-hmm. They will get in your grill and make you uncomfortable and push you to the side. Seth talked about that the other day.
Right.
They own the middle. They push you to the sides and then suffocate you. If Duke's making shots, I like them a lot. But they're going to have to make shots. What I loved about Duke, though, was the last 5 minutes against Sparty. That was a sense of, hey, we're here to close this out. Mm-hmm. That looked like a championship team. And I'm not talking about a conference championship. I'm talking about a national championship team.
I think we have to find out if the Blue Devils have had that moment Sunday that can push you all the way into New Orleans. That felt like a step Sunday in the last 6 minutes of that game.
No question about it. Totally agree.
But in order for it to validate itself, you have to be able to handle a powder keg defensively like Texas Tech.
And they're, like I said, this is no joke. They are going to punch you between the eyes. And they're going to hit you all night. So get ready for it.
And I'll also go back to something Seth said on the show the other day. That is, the whistles will matter in this game. The way the game is officiated will determine the temperament of the game. And I hate to say that because it's the Sweet 16, but that's what's going to happen here because Texas Tech's got some depth to them, okay? I mean, they play this style. This is not too much of a variant from what Chris Beard did that took the team to the national title game against Virginia a couple of years ago from a defensive side. So we'll see how this goes. Mark Adams is, by the way, if you don't know about the coach of the Red Raiders, it's a fascinating case study in coaching journey and all those things and who this guy is and what he does and kind of the way he goes about coaching his team. He's done a remarkable, remarkable job. Now, granted, they had a good team anyway. Whether you and I are coaching or Mark Adams, but with a guy who knows basketball coaching them, they've gone and been able to keep the kind of success they've had.
Fantastic job. He is one of four coaches in the Sweet 16 that are first-time coaches
right.
that are in the Sweet 16. That's the first time that's ever happened mm-hmm. in the history of this tournament. Of course, from an ACC perspective, that includes Hubert Davis on that list. But, man, he has done a great job, and they have a really cool culture. I mean, their fan base is great, but they have – they kind of remind me of Virginia. Ironically, Virginia beat Texas Tech for the Natty and all that great stuff. But they've got that same tough, we are going to make your life miserable for the next 40 minutes and score enough points to take care of business. Texas Tech is really, really good.
All right, let's get to late night in Philadelphia on Friday. And when I say late night, I'm talking be lucky the ball's in the air before 10 o'clock. Look at the numbers Brady Manek has put up. He's plus 64 in 60. Carolina is plus 64 in 61 minutes of Brady Manek on the floor. This guy has been a remarkable difference maker in the last, what, Pac, month for Carolina?
No question about it. And I go back to when Hubert Davis had a kind of an impromptu out of nowhere conversation to the media about, man, it's been an honor to coach this guy. I wish I had him for more than 1 year. Brady Manek's been fantastic. And you know, he put up 26 against Baylor before he was escorted out of the building with 10 minutes to go. He was on his way to scoring 40 against Baylor.
All I know is when the list has Lenny Rosenbluth and Phil Ford at the top, I mean, Tyler Zeller was a good player. We know about Hansbrough. You know about Charlie Scott. When you're on that list right there, you're doing things.
That's right.
Most points in first two NCAA tournament games? Holy smokes. I had no idea.
You know what, though? I think it also goes back to Hubert Davis finally tweaking the lineup and understanding, hey, R.J. Davis at the point puts Caleb Love in a more natural scoring position, which makes it even easier for Manek because Baycott's been so good inside. Hubert has found the right combination. Now it's just a matter of can they make shots. Could be a heck of a game against UCLA.
And R.J. Davis and Carolina have assisted on 82% of their made baskets in the tournament. It's the highest rate in the field, by the way, for assists. All right, off to Chicago. The shy boogie, as it were, for Iowa State and Miami. Canes are outscoring opponents 40-4 in transition. They embarrassed Auburn in transition the other day.
Yeah, that wasn't even was really, quite frankly, was competitive against the number two seed.
Right. So you know,
John Crispin was on with me yesterday, Wes.
Yes.
And I think John Crispin's great at what he does. He talked about this game. He said, you know, of all the matchups coming up this week, Iowa State and Miami may be the most intriguing in the sense that both backcourts are so similar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing that Miami's had going for them all year, old, experienced guards that really know how to play. Guess what Iowa State's got? Ditto. So this is a fascinating matchup when, again, a guarantee that a double-digit seed's getting to the Elite Eight. Should be a fun game.
Yeah. This is the fifth Sweet 16 game between double-digit seeds as well. First since 2016 when Syracuse defeated Gonzaga. 2014, Dayton defeated Stanford. 2011, VCU beat Florida State, as we said. And then Providence beat Chattanooga in 1997. By the way, that was a Chattanooga team that got their start. Mac McCarthy, coaching the Mocs here in Charlotte, they beat Georgia in the opening round of the NCAA tournament that year. Can we say that Miami and Iowa State might be underseeded? Or do you think they got
it right? Who cares?
Doesn't matter now, right?
I said it. On Selection Sunday, people want Tennessee should be a one seed. How about Tennessee win a game? Kentucky should be a one. How about win a game? I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what the seed is.
Right.
I mean, St. Peter's is a 15. Anybody talking about that? Hey, they're in the Sweet 16.
Sure.
It's all about winning games. Like I keep going back to the same old argument. I don't care what you're seeded. You're one of the 68. And roll the ball out and make some shots. Go win games.
All right. So what do you think? Wednesday, what do you think?
I think about what?
ACC sweep this thing? Thursday and Friday night?
Would you take that? Yeah, you'd take that. But BPI doesn't think they're going to game. I will bet the BPI is wrong. That's what I'll bet.
Okay.
I'll take to the fact that BPI's got the ACC losing all three. I don't think that'll happen.
Okay.
I could be wrong. We'll see.
What
do you think? You have an opinion?
I think we're going to get three to the Elite Eight. The one I'm concerned about, believe it or not, is Duke.
I think Duke better be ready to go now. Yeah. Again, we're saying that to Coach K. He's only won 99 NCAA tournament games, and we're sitting here with dogs breaking it down. And Coach K, by the way, Coach K and Duke.
Yeah.
All right. They've never seen Texas Tech, right?
In the tournament. Right.
Coach K has beaten 81 different teams in the NCAA tournament. 81 different teams.
In the 99 wins. It's pretty
correct.
Awesome.
But let me put it in perspective. That is more wins than Louisville has ever in the NCAA tournament. That's more wins than Syracuse has ever in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. More than Indiana. More than Villanova. More than Michigan State ever. Mm-hmm. In the, 81
right.
different teams he's beaten.
Yeah.
Mike Krzyzewski, with 99 wins, has more NCAA tournament wins, twice as many wins, as the entire Southeastern Conference teams, with the exception of Kentucky. Now let that marinate a second. Hey, we got a great league. You got it. Your entire league, all of them except Kentucky. Coach K has more than double NCAA tournament wins than every one of your other teams.
That is silly.
Now let that, now, before, next time somebody who's a hairdo wants to start barking about the ACC, just remind them.
Wow.
That's a cool hot take, but how about the facts? Don't let that get in the way of a good story. There you go. That's all I got to say.
If you weren't with us the first couple days of the week, there is one prevailing thought on this program, principally from over there. Time for St. Peter's to go. Is that right?
I'm not the only one that said. I had Crispin.
Yes.
And Tim Welsh were on yesterday with me on radio.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you know, St. Pete's a cool story, aren't they? But it's time to go. It's time to go. Let's get to the big boys. Let's let the big boys get to the Elite Eight, and now let's have ourselves a tournament.
We'll take a break.
Cinderella's cool for like a week.
And then, I understand. I know. I got you.
Let's go.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Wake Forest in action tonight. NIT, they're in College Station. And Big Dance gets cranked up tomorrow. Can't wait. It's going to be great.
This is an interesting on this date in history. A couple of these that are really fascinating. March 23rd, 1986. Top seed Duke, number one in the country, defeated Navy 71-50. David Robinson, 23-10. By the way, his son would later go on and play at Duke, by the way. Mark Allery, oh yeah. Johnny Dawkins on the rebound. Duke wins. Dawkins 28, Allery 18, Billis 10 rebounds.
Should do a documentary or something like
that. Has that been done?
Should. Yeah. They haven't done that already.
70. They went on the fall 72-69 at Reunion Arena in Dallas in the national championship game.
Louisville was pretty good that year, weren't
they?
Never nervous, Purvis.
Yep. Interesting, in the Chronicle of Duke. Okay, in the chronicle of what we're watching here, in the final, potentially four ball games, you hope, knock on
perfect
wood.
World.
Perfect world, four games for Mike Krzyzewski. We know the documentary was out there and on the opening night of ACC Network, the class that saved Coach K. There are all sorts of moments here. But in the annals of the ACC, the 86 Duke team falls where for you?
Amongst Duke?
In terms of what this meant ultimately to Mike Krzyzewski.
I don't know. I to me, the game we talked about yesterday,
mm-hmm.
when Duke beat Vegas,
that's the game for me.
I mean, the 86 doesn't resonate to me as much as 91.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was important. 84, they beat Carolina in the tournament. No, all those things.
It's all 86. Part of the building part. I get right. it. But as far as Coach K on the national scene, mm-hmm. to me, when Duke looked Vegas in the eye and went, it's our turn.
I thought that changed them nationally.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So the 86 thing to me was like, you know, again, where I was in life at 86, mm-hmm. fresh out of college, I mean, I kind of understood what the ACC was all about, but it really wasn't about Duke.
That's right.
Wasn't, I mean, Duke wasn't any standard in the ACC in 86. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Valvano won a national title. There's this guy, Dean Smith. You might have heard of him. Pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was taking shots at Dean was K, if you will. Today's K. Dean Smith was the standard in this league. It wasn't Mike Krzyzewski.
I think
the 86.
The one thing the tournament doc pointed out was when K got the job a couple of years prior to Carolina winning in 82, then Valvano won in 83, it was important Mike Krzyzewski for the neighborhood, you know, for him to get to a Final Four, whether they won or lost it. They had a great year, and they got to the national championship game. But I'm with you about 91. 5 years later is when Duke was on this rocket ship to land we didn't know, right, in terms of where that program was
going.
And
they had to bust down the door.
And Vegas
just
was
like
the
door. What Mark Few's got to do at Gonzaga. I mean, they've been great. But at some point in time, you've got to knock the door down.
Right.
Matt Painter at Purdue, great coach.
Got to knock the door down.
Got to close the deal. I mean, so to me, that's when Duke closed the deal. Yeah. And the rest is history.
And the documentary that Jay and John Dahl and those guys did was great to describe all those guys coming together and what that bond meant to that program.
Because it did save Coach
Absolutely.
K at
Duke.
There's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, without that class mm-hmm. and those guys with the results and getting the job done, he doesn't survive at Duke.
That's right. But the whole – this meteor that is Duke basketball, I'm with you on Vegas.
When Coach K goes and finally gets his dog and is chilling out in the garden, rocking and rolling, having fun, traveling the world, mm-hmm. and he looks back at his career – there will be milestone games and moments. And obviously that class certainly got him on the right track.
Right.
But it was beating Vegas and beating Roy at Kansas yeah. that all of a sudden, hey, when you cut down those nets for the first time, from a national perspective, he was off to the races. Yeah.
On this day in 86, he reaches the Final Four for the first time with the win over Navy at Brendan Byrne Arena at the New Jersey Meadowlands. On this date in 1957, North Carolina beat Kansas 54-53, triple overtime to win the first national title in ACC men's basketball, 32-0, and remain the only undefeated national champion in ACC history. Wilt Chamberlain, there in the dark jersey, 23 points, 14 rebounds. Lenny Rosenbluth, there holding the MVP trophy, 20 points for Carolina. They won at Municipal Auditorium in Kansas City. The other note on this is Carolina had to play three overtimes to beat Michigan State and Jumpin' Johnny Green in the semifinals. But this basketball team, and we talked about it earlier this week, this basketball team galvanized what Everett Case had started, and they took over the momentum of the state. And when they won the national championship in 57, it just sent this league forward in a major way behind what NC State had done early. Then Carolina wins it, and all of a sudden, the 1960s, this league just blew up.
Everybody has a first.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. By the way, there's not been an undefeated national champion since 1976, and that's when Bob Knight in Indiana beat Michigan State at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. So
I got a funny story about that.
Okay.
Actually, it was not 76. It was 81. When Bobby Knight.
In Philadelphia. Yeah.
No, I take that back. It was 76. You know what? Do I have time to tell this story?
We have an excerpt from the tournament, but sure.
All right. This is quick. I'll make it quick. Billy is doing the game.
Sure.
And
with Kurt Gowdy, right?
And this is Billy's first big time deal with the Final Four, the national championship.
Yeah.
And they do the starting lineups,
mm-hmm.
and Bobby Knight calls an assistant, get Billy Packer over here. It's right before the game starts, before the tip. Have you heard this story?
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's a good one.
Billy takes off the headset. He walks across the court, and Billy to have Billy tell a story. He's like, I'm, you know, here I am thinking I'm a hot shot walking across the floor. It's 10 seconds before the tip of the game. Knight's got his players around him. Billy, you know, Coach Knight, Coach, you need me? Knight doesn't even turn around. He basically has his back towards Billy and goes, hey, Packer, where's the blankety blank ACC tonight? That's all he said to him. And Billy, you know, just kind of meanders out of the thing, walks across the court thinking, oh, boy, he just put me totally in this. And then, of course, Indiana goes out and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Like that.
Ricky Green of Michigan State to win the national championship. All right, back to 1957. Lenny Rosenbluth and the Tar Heels. But he was confident they were going to go all the way that year.
At the beginning of the season, Coach calls me into the office and says, Lenny, this is your team. You are the captain. And I said, Coach, I'm not going to let you down.
North Carolina, All-American Lenny Rosenbluth. He shoots the foul line and he hits.
More marksmanship now by Lenny Rosenbluth. The Tar Heel sharpshooter is right on the button.
By about the fourth or fifth game, I said, Coach, we're going to win them all. I said, don't worry about it. Looked at me like I'm crazy. I said, Coach, we're going to win them all.
That season, Rosenbluth averaged 28 points a game, to this day, the Carolina record.
Hit the Rosenbluth, the left.
He played with a New York moxie. He would roam in that middle. They knew where to go, how to get it to him, and he could really shoot.
Rosenbluth dribbles, shoots, and hits it.
McGuire had three plays. Get the ball to Rosenbluth. Timeout, get the damn ball to Rosenbluth. Timeout, get the effing ball to Rosenbluth.
There he goes. Rosenbluth, top one up again. He's hot.
By the end of the regular season, Carolina still hadn't lost a game, and Rosenbluth had beaten out Wilt Chamberlain of Kansas for National Player of the Year. But the conference tournament was still ahead.
They're an undefeated team, ranked number one in the nation, but they have to go in the ACC tournament and win it, or they go nowhere.
Hey, Billy!
Can't
what's
get rid
up?
Of it's everywhere.
How you doing, Billy?
The ubiquitous Billy Packer.
UCLA did it four times. Look at 71-73. They went 60-0. Check you later. 67-64, Carolina 57.
John Wooden, pretty good.
Yeah. The 56 San Francisco team, Bill Russell was the center. Casey Jones was the guard. You think they were any good,
yeah,
by the way?
They're pretty good.
Yeah. Those are the undefeated national champions in men's basketball. All right.
A little history lesson.
Billy.
Hey, Packer.
Yeah.
Where are the blankety blanks the ACC tonight?
There you go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.